kunde giri govardhana ki jai. Vrindavan dhamma ki jai. Mathura dhamma ki jai. Navadvip Mayapur dhamma ki jai. Jagannath Puri dhamma ki jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai. Bhakti Devi ki jai. Tulsi Maharani ki jai. Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Vishnu Stakala Srimati Bhakti Vanta Swami Vati Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pachami Vase Sasimha Svachadi Svachadi. Vande Nam Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamaham Sri Guru and Vaishnavamscha. Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sadhanam Raghunatham Dikam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sambhadutam Parijana Sainta Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Panam Sagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamstra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. March 20th, 2010 in Vrindavan, and we're reading from Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 4, Transcendental Knowledge, Text 8. Parichanaya sadhunam, vinashaya chajustritam, dharmasam sthapanartaya, sambhavami yuge yuge. Sadhunam of the devotees. Vinashaya. For the annihilation. Cha. And. Duskritam. Of the miscreants. Dharma. Principles of religion. Samstanapa artaya. To reestablish. Sambhavami. I do appear. Yuge. Millennium. Yuge. After millennium. To deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So Prabhupada makes four main points in this purport. According to Bhagavad Gita, a sadhu, I'm going to ask you what they are. A sadhu, holy man, is a man in Krishna consciousness. A person may appear to be irreligious, but if he has the qualification of Krishna consciousness wholly and fully, he is to be understood to be a sadhu. And duskritam applies to those who do not care for Krishna consciousness. Such miscreants or duskritam are described as foolish and the lowest of mankind, even though they may be decorated with mundane education. Whereas a person who is 100% engaged in Krishna consciousness is accepted as a sadhu, even though such a person may be neither learned nor well cultured. What did Prabhupada say there? He said what? What was that? Somebody tell me what Prabhupada just said in that sentence. You were all sleeping? What did he say? Yes. Right. He said even if he's not learned or well-cultured. Good news for some of us. Good news for most of us. As far as the atheistic are concerned, it is not necessary for the Supreme Lord to appear as he is to destroy them as he did with the demons Ravana and Kamsa. The Lord has many agents who are quite competent to vanquish demons, but the Lord especially descends to appease his unalloyed devotees, who are always harassed by the demoniac. The demoniac harasses the devotee, even though the latter may happen to be his kin. Although Prahlad Maharaj was the son of Hiranyakashipu, he was nonetheless persecuted by his father. Hiranyakashipu was the first child molester in the universe, child abuser, right? Child abuser, is it? Adi child abuser. Although Devaki, the mother of Krishna, was the sister of Kamsa, she and her husband Vasudeva were persecuted only because Krishna was to be born of them. So Lord Krishna appeared primarily to deliver Devaki rather than kill Kamsa, but both were performed simultaneously. Therefore it is said here that to deliver the devotee and vanquish the demon miscreants, the Lord appears in different incarnations. So far Prabhupada's talked about two things. First thing he did was to sadhu, he defined the debt. What is a sadhu? And the next thing he did was explain about the demoniac, and that Krishna doesn't really come to kill the demoniac, even though Krishna says he comes to kill the demoniac. Prabhupada said, well, he doesn't really mean that because he has many agents that can do that, and therefore he's really coming to favor the devotee. That was the first 2 points. In Chaitanya Charitamrita of Krishna Das Kaviraj, the following verses, Madhya 20, 263 to 264, summarize these principles of incarnation. And if you're Bengali, I'm sorry that I'm about to butcher your language. Shristi hetu ye murti prapanche avatare, se ishvara murti avatara namadare. Maya tita para vyome sabara avastane, vishve avatari dare avatare nama. The avatara, or incarnation of Godhead, descends from the kingdom of God for material manifestation. And the particular form of the personality of Godhead who so descends is called an incarnation, or avatar. Such incarnations are situated in the spiritual world, the kingdom of God. When they descend to the material creation, they assume the name avatar. There are many kinds of avatars, such as Purusha avatars, Guna avatars, Lila avatars, Saktivesha avatars, Manvan avatars, and Yuga avatars. What are some of the avatars without looking? Yuga avatars. More? Manvantars. Lila avatars. Saktivesh. Guna. Manvan avatars. Good. All appearing on schedule all over the universe. Krishna seems to like schedules. Okay? You want to know something about Krishna's personality? You can see he's a very scheduled person. The sun always rises. You can time exactly when the sun's going to rise. The Astakalila Lila, the Goswamis have delineated exactly this minute, you know, like 7:24, 8:03. So Krishna's, and he's never late. Not like airplanes or, you know, the airplanes list the percentage of the time they're on time, like 80% on time. And they're very proud if they're 80% on time. So Krishna is 100% on time. He never has an excuse. I was caught, held up in traffic. I got an unexpected phone call. Can he also appear out of schedule? Sure. Okay, so it says here. All appearing on schedule all over the universe, but Lord Krishna is the primeval Lord, the fountainhead of all avatars. Lord Sri Krishna descends for the specific purpose of mitigating the anxieties of the pure devotees, who are very anxious to see him in his original Vrindavan pastimes. Therefore, the prime purpose of the Krishna avatar is to satisfy his unalloyed devotees. So this is the third topic Prabhupada's talking about, and here he's talking about, again, satisfying the devotees. He's talking about avatars. He's giving what the definition of an avatar, the kinds of avatar, and what the purpose, which is to satisfy the devotees. So far we had the sadhu definition of a sadhu. Then we had annihilating the mind. The Krishna doesn't really come for that. He really comes to please the devotees. Then a discussion of avatar, and Prabhupada's making the point that the avatar comes to please the devotees. You noticing some theme recurring here? Okay. Fourth point now. The Lord says that he incarnates himself in every millennium. Now, it's interesting that Prabhupada uses the English word millennium. It's not a very, how would you say, precise word. Because the literal definition of millennium is what?
1,000 years.
So, obviously, the Sanskrit word here is what?
Yuga.
A yuga is not 1,000 years. A yuga is much longer than 1,000 years. So Prabhupada's using the word millennium, or we would say loosely. He's using the word millennium to mean an age. How do we know that? This is an important point. When you're studying the Shastra, how do you know that Srila Prabhupada is not using the English word millennium here in its literal dictionary definition? How do we know? The yuga cycle is much longer, yes. And how else do we know?
Because we know exactly where
the Lord doesn't come every 1,000 years.
Yes. So there's many other places in the Shastra where Srila Prabhupada gives us the exact number of years of each of the yugas, and there's other places where the exact schedule that the Lord appears is given. Prabhupada does say here he's appears on the schedule. Therefore, we can understand. I mean, if you find that there's something that's said in the Shastra by the Acharyas, and every place it's said exactly the same, but if you find some places explained a little this way or a little that way, then you have to look at the whole picture. And this is very important for studying the Shastra, because people will sometimes take one sentence and use it to hit you on the head. The Christians have a word for this. It's called the devil can cite scripture. And Prabhupada also talks about this. He uses the same expression, devil can cite scripture. So you can use the Shastra or the words of the Acharyas to make any point. No? Therefore, it's important to study all of the books. And I've concluded that it's not only important to study all the books, but also to listen to Prabhupada's lectures and conversations. When you listen to Srila Prabhupada's lectures and conversations, you understand a lot of how he's applying the philosophy to time, place, and circumstance. But if you only listen to the lectures, there's many topics he doesn't cover in lectures and conversations. A lot of the deeper, more esoteric, or more technical topics Prabhupada only discusses in his purports. His lectures are often more simple. So it's very helpful to get a very full understanding by really studying the books and regularly listening to Prabhupada's lectures. The Lord says that he incarnates himself in every millennium. Now, just see the logical point Prabhupada is going to draw from this. This indicates that he incarnates also in the age of Kali. You have a book. As stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the incarnation, the age of Kali is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada is using this Sambhavami Yuge Yuge as evidence for the fact that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is also an avatar. The incarnation, the age of Kali, is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who spread the worship of Krishna by the Sankirtan movement, congregational chanting of the holy names, and spread Krishna consciousness throughout India. He predicted that this culture of Sankirtan would be broadcast all over the world, from town to town and village to village. Lord Chaitanya is the incarnation of Krishna, the personality of Godhead, is described secretly but not directly, in the confidential parts of the revealed scriptures, such as the Upanishads, Mahabharata, and Bhagavatam. Now, here in this purport, Prabhupada's not quoting those references. There are other purports where Prabhupada will sometimes list all of those verses. The devotees of Lord Krishna are very much attracted by the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. Now, that's an interesting statement. The devotees of Lord Krishna are very much attracted by the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. So if you worship the Lord in his form of Krishna, you'll be very attracted to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement. This avatar of the Lord does not kill the miscreants, but delivers them by his causeless mercy. So that relates them back to Vinashaya Chaidusvitam. So Parichanaya Sadhunam Vinashaya Chaidusvitam Dharmastam Stapanartaya Sambhavami Yuge Yuge, to deliver the pious and to annihilate the miscreants, as well as to reestablish the principles of religion, I myself appear millennium after millennium. So we've had several people speaking on this verse. I'm sure everyone's found a different theme. But what really jumped out at me is the Lord's kindness to the devotees. The Lord's kindness to the devotees. I just got an email today from one second-generation Gurukuli, call them devotee, who was writing how he had wanted to be a teacher. And he was asking me, where should I study? What should I do? And I said, well, you should talk to Krishna and he'll open the right doors. Ask him to open the right doors. So he wrote me this long email about how Krishna's opened all the doors for him. Made this arrangement, and this wonderful letter. And at the end of the letter, he said, but I have a question. He said, whenever I look at my life, I can see that Krishna's making all the perfect arrangements for me. And that he's always very kind. But when I'm in the middle of something, I can't always see that. What do I do? How do I conquer this? So this verse and this purport help to give us faith that Krishna is always very kind to the devotees. Even if the devotee is not very well-cultured or learned. And still Krishna is very kind to the devotees. So this gives us some idea of Krishna's kindness to us because we're all trying to be devotees. And it also gives us some idea of how we should be treating the other devotees. If Krishna is so kind to the devotees, how should we be behaving? And this gives us a little clue. What is the secret to winning the heart of the Lord? Burjan Prabhu in his class the other day was saying, quoting Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, how we should try to act in such a way not to see Krishna, but so Krishna will want to see us, so he'll recognize us. It always reminds me many years ago when Bill Clinton was president in America. There was one 14-year-old boy who ran his own business. And he donated $1,000 to the tax fund, to the Internal Revenue. He said, I want you to use this to pay off the country's debt. So the president was so impressed that he personally called this boy. You know, imagine 14 years old and you pick up the phone and there's the president. I think he even came to see him. And there was, before that, with President Reagan, Ronald Reagan, there was one woman who was very, very poor her whole life. She was a washerwoman. And generally in America, people put their laundry in a machine. You don't usually give your laundry to someone to wash. In India, you know, just the opposite. But unusual, not so many washerwomen in America anymore. But that was what she did as a living. And she never married, as she had no automobile. She lived in a very simple home. She had one black and white television that didn't work very well. The only book she had was a Bible. She didn't make much money washing clothes, ironing clothes. But every week she took $15 and put it in the bank. Every week. And at one point, the banker said to her, you know, you now have a lot of money. What would you like to do with it? So she started a fund to send poor people to college. So because she did this, again, she came to the notice of the president and she ended up being brought to the Capitol and brought to the White House and given some award. And then many, many people gave a lot of money to this fund that she started. It ended up having millions and millions and millions of dollars. So if one wants to see the president, one has to do something where the president will call. You can't just go to the door and knock on the door. Or you write a letter, you know, you write a letter, you'll just get a form reply back. I was having some problem a year ago with an airline. And even with an airline, to talk to somebody in charge is very difficult. It took me about 3 months to find what was the phone number. And even then, I just got a recording, you know, and some secretary called back. So even if you want to talk to a supervisor in an airline, it's very difficult. Right? And very, very difficult. You can't just push your way in. What to speak of the president of a company, of a country. But you think, you know, how big is this country? How big is the whole planet? The rest of the planets in the universe, they see the whole Earth is just a little speck of light. So how difficult is it to see Krishna? If you want to see Krishna, how can you see Krishna? How is it possible? But if you do something extraordinary, then Krishna will want to see you. So you can say, well, what extraordinary thing can I possibly do? Very difficult. What could I do that would interest God? So here's a little clue, what interests God? It interests Krishna enough that he is Sambhavami Yuga Yuga. He's coming as an avatar. Prabhupada says that all these incarnations, they exist in the spiritual world. He's coming here to this place. And why is he coming? What's attracting him here? The devotees. So if we do something nice for the devotees, then he'll be very interested. Pretty simple. It's a very, very simple principle. Just like my granddaughter's there. So if you give me something, I won't be as happy as if you give her something. And that's just natural. Right? If you come to me and say, oh, I met your granddaughter, she's this, she's that, praise her, I'll be very pleased. If you say the same praise of me, I'll think, what do you want? I won't be very impressed. In fact, just the opposite. I may become suspicious. But if you praise her, I will never be suspicious. I'll just think, oh, very nice. This is a very good person. And similarly, if you do something to hurt her, then no matter how nice you are to me, you'll become my enemy. Isn't it? If you hurt her, you cheat her, you can give me so much money and praise, and I won't want anything to do with it. It's a very simple principle. Isn't it a fact? Even someone has a pet animal like that. Prabhupada says, love me, love my dog. If you say to somebody, if someone, of course, here in India, thankfully, and only a few, we've seen one lady walking in Moy Bazaar with a fancy pedigree dog. That's so many. But when people have some pet animal, if you say, oh, your dog is so cute, then they love you. Immediately they trust you. Immediately. And you do something for them. So this is the key. If you want to know what is the key, I think all of us here, we've been chanting. Everyone here has been chanting for a while. Worshipping the deity, so many things. You want to know what is the key to getting Krishna's attention. And you think there must be some trick to this Krishna consciousness. What's the trick? How come this person is advanced and I'm doing the same thing, I'm not advanced? But this is the trick. How do you treat the sadhus? How do you deal with the devotees? So, Prabhupada here is defining who is a sadhu. Because someone might think a sadhu is a scholar, right? Or some very pious person, a very religious person. He's saying a sadhu is someone who's 100% dedicated to Krishna. And if someone is not, right, maya paritagyana, they may have great jnana. They may be able to recite all the shastras. They may know how to do all the sacrifices. Or they may be very well behaved. They may know all the proper etiquette. But if they're not devoted to Krishna, they're not a sadhu. And interestingly enough, he says, a sadhu is someone who's devoted to Krishna, even if they're not very well cultured. I always worry when I come to India that the Indians will see my behavior and think, oh, she's really not a well-cultured person. And I've tried to become Indian in this life, and it just doesn't work very well. I've really tried, and it just, it's like when you dye your hair, the roots always show. You know, you can try to wiggle your head this way, and but your birth culture always is manifest. So this is not. This is also when we're looking at others. If we're seeing who is a devotee, how to tell actually who is a devotee? Devotee is someone who loves Krishna. That's really the demarcation. Why? Because Krishna is Satyam Param. He's the absolute truth. If you love the absolute truth, if you're in harmony with the absolute truth, you have Ekadvama said in the Ishapanishad, if you have oneness of interest with the absolute truth, sadhu, sad is sat, or sat means eternal or truth, then you're also true. And if you're out of harmony with the absolute truth, then you're false. It's a very simple thing. Just like sometimes we see a dance performance and the people dancing are dancing in harmony. You ever see really expert where they each move their arm exactly the same way at the same time? But if one of the dancers thinks, oh, I'm just one of the group, let me be the prima donna, the chief dancer, I'll start my own dance, then there's chaos. Even if that person is a very expert dancer, if they start dancing in their own way, then it's chaos. Or musicians. You know, you have, the other night there was a nice concert at the MVT a couple weeks ago. And there's, you know, one person's on the saxophone, one person's on the drum and the harmonium. But they have to play in harmony. And if somebody thinks, oh, now I want to be the, we call in America, the big kahuna. You know, I want to be the big chief. I want everyone to look at me, so let me play in my own way. Then you simply have noise. So a sadhu is one who's playing in harmony with Krishna. Prabhupada says in Krishna book that the whole world is full of Krishna singing. He says this in the chapter of Maslila. But it depends on whether or not you're hearing Krishna singing. He also said everywhere Krishna is dancing. But some people are dancing in harmony with Krishna, and other people are dancing out of harmony. So if you're dancing in harmony with Krishna, you're a sadhu. If you're dancing out of harmony with Krishna, then you're a miscreant. You're simply causing a disturbance. Is that pretty simple? Right? And if you have a musical performance and someone's out of harmony, you have to ask them to get off the stage. Correct? Doesn't matter how good they are. We say, no, it's not about you, it's about the performance. Get off the stage. So if someone thinks it's about me, oh, it's about me, how learned I am, how cultured I am, how pious I am. Get off the stage. And even you're not so expert, like we've seen some dances with little children. They're not so expert, but they're dancing in harmony. Everyone appreciates, isn't it? In Mayapur recently, they did a dance drama about Lord Jagannath. The very young children. Very young children. It was so pleasing because everyone is just cooperating for the drama. So that is a sadhu. And here we see that Krishna will come personally to kill the demons just to make the devotees happy. He doesn't need to bother with that. He can send a, you know, storm. A tsunami, disease, he can just give people individually a heart attack. I mean, that's not a big job for him. He has his agents, Durga Devi, just like, I don't know why in Vrindavan, but there's this big murti of Durga. Oh, what she's doing in Vrindavan on her tiger with her trident. Hey? So Durga's trident is sufficient, isn't it? Prabhupada says she's not an ordinary mother piercing her children with so she's sufficient, right? Pralaya. Krishna says later, Bhutva, Bhutva, Praliyate. Again and again, the story. That's her business. Okay? Krishna can just send a woman to do it, you know, to speak of anybody else. He doesn't need to do that. But just to please it. So this is how dear the devotees are. The devotees are so dear.
that Krishna will personally come. Personally. I mean, even Prabhupada gives the example here of Kamsa. Kamsa was his maternal uncle. So Krishna's even willing, he says, dharma samstapanataya, to reestablish dharma. But Krishna's even willing to violate ordinary dharma. Ordinary dharma, you don't kill your own uncle. But he's willing to violate ordinary dharma. Why? Just to make Devaki and Vasudev happy. They were so relieved. Imagine, somebody's killed all your babies. If someone's killed your babies, you would really like to see their heads smashed on the ground. That gave them great pleasure. Kamsa's head's finally getting smashed on the ground. Dragged in the arena. That's how much Krishna loves his devotees. And he incarnates. Prabhupada says that he incarnates simply to give pleasure to his devotees. Especially, he said what? So the devotees can see his? Vrindavan pastimes. Yes, thank you. Because the devotees are wanting, don't you all want to see? And we're saying every morning to Tulsi, I want to see. Give me a residence in the Kunja so I can always see the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. So devotees are always wanting to see. Just like ordinary materialists, they always want to see the pastimes of some movie star or cricket player or politician. Isn't it? They're always wanting to see. They're checking their schedule. Like here it says Krishna appears on the schedule. So they're checking their schedule. When will my favorite movie star appear on the television? And they tell their friends, I'm sorry, I can't do this now. I have to be home to watch the right, isn't it? Or they travel long distances. Let me go to this sports game, let me go to that game, so I will see the pastimes of this sports star. So the devotees, they're checking Krishna's schedule. Like the residents of the higher planets, they're checking. When's Krishna's schedule? When's he going to appear on the earth planet? Okay, let's leave everything aside, forget it, let's go. Let's see Krishna's appearance, let's see Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes. And so many devotees, they're arranging to come to Vrindavan and Karti or for Gopurnima, let me come see Krishna's pastimes. So Krishna's coming just to please the devotees. Just to please his devotees. Who wants to come to this world? Any of us like this world very much? So why would Krishna want to come here? But just to please the devotees, he's coming here. And the end, Prabhupada's talking about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and how he's coming also. How says that the devotees of Krishna, they're very pleased with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So therefore, if we want to please Krishna, we should be a sadhu and we should serve a sadhu. So I was thinking about, we have these 10 offenses on chanting. And it's very nice to explain in the Madhurya Kadambini, what are the things that keep us from Krishna? You know, why is it we're chanting, serving the deity, taking charanamrita, we're doing all these things that it says in the Shastra, you do this thing, you'll attain love of God. You do this thing, you'll attain love of God. But somehow we're doing these things and we don't necessarily attain love of God immediately. Well, maybe you all have. So that means there's some block. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says these blocks are these anarthas. And these anarthas come from past sins. That's things like laziness, sleepiness, greediness, anger, lust. From past piety, that means an attraction to heavenly pleasure. You want everything clean and beautiful, pleasing to your senses. Or you want liberation. Then there's also blocks that come from offenses to the deities, to the dham. But he says all these can be eradicated by chanting. They can all be eradicated by chanting. So that only leaves the offenses on chanting. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Harinam Chintamani says all the offenses on chanting can be relieved if you're very attentive. Now it's interesting that when Srila Prabhupada will speak about the offenses, there are certain offenses that he'll mention are the worst offenses. Do you know which offenses he'll mention are the worst? Blaspheming the devotees. Committing sin on the strength of chanting. There's one more.
Inattentive chanting leads to all
other offenses. Inattentive chanting. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that.
No.
To disobey the orders of Guru. So those are the three offenses that Srila Prabhupada will mention as the worst offense. Disobey the orders of Guru, sin on the strength of chanting, and to blaspheme the devotees. And the one that we find really emphasized is this blaspheming the devotees, or offending the Vaishnavas. For example, if you read Chaitanya Bhagavat, you'll find a number of statements there by Vrindavan Das Thakur that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is willing to deliver any sinner, but he will not deliver those who offend the devotees. Now, that doesn't mean that as long as you don't offend devotees, you can go rape and kill and steal, because then you're sinning on the strength of chanting. But the point is that how serious it is to offend the devotees. What a serious thing that is. And conversely, how wonderful it is to serve the devotees. Now, as far as this thing with attentive chanting, at least in my own experience, I've seen that people who are offending devotees have a very difficult time to chant attentively. Very, very difficult. The whole time they're chanting, they're thinking about what devotee they're going to offend next. Have you noticed this? And if you chant attentively, it's very hard to offend the devotees. Because if you're chanting attentively, Krishna from within the heart, Ganati Pinga Bhashvata, he'll show you, oh, you're saying this thing, he'll make it clear how you're treating the devotees, and you'll feel some hesitancy to behave like that. So there's different ways one can offend the devotees. The worst way is to kill a devotee. Hopefully none of us have a problem with that. The next is to blaspheme devotees. A blaspheme means literally to say something false. But it's interesting that Sridhar Swami, the commentator on Bhagavatam, Sridhar Swami, he says that whether it's true or not, narrating the faults of a devotee constitutes blasphemy. Now, I understand this also as means taking pleasure in. Because Prabhupada says to call a thief is not blasphemy. But if once they're saying, oh, that, look at that devotee. Oh, he's not well cultured. Look at that person's lack of culture. Look at their lack of learning. They said that sloka wrong. Right? Look at that, they're taking charanamrita with their left hand. I am so much better. They don't know how to tie a dhoti. Whatever. It's amazing how the mind finds so many reasons to criticize others. So this tendency to find faults in others, even if they're true faults, this mentality of let me find the fault, and then envy. Envy. This is particularly true when devotees have some position of authority. And my own conclusion is that because we envy Krishna, and anyone in a position of authority is representing Krishna, we tend to put our envy on that person. So you'll find that a lot of the criticism of devotees is criticism of someone who's in authority. Women criticizing their husband, people criticizing the temple commander, the temple president, or criticizing the GBC, or even some people criticizing their spiritual master. Another way to offend devotees is to fail to offer respects or to fail to offer obeisances. One should always be feeling some respect. Also to get angry at the devotees. Of course, if you're instructing someone, you may have to get angry at them sometimes. It's not that parents should never get angry at their children because they're devotees. Oh, did you just hit your brother with the fire truck on the head? Don't do that. You have to sometimes, if you're instructing somebody, you have to sometimes say, hey, you can't do that. My god sister, Janava, who was painting the deities in Dallas, the day before they were to be installed. And then on the day of the installation, the paint was still wet. And they couldn't do the installation. They had to take off all the paint and repaint the deities. Prabhupada was furious. He called her into his room. He said, you're a nonsense and you will always remain a nonsense. Of course, she hasn't always remained a nonsense. She's a very nice lady. But the point is that sometimes to instruct, one must become angry. That's necessary. But generally, we should not feel angry at Vaishnavas. Anger usually comes from our own attachments. I want something, I'm not getting it, and I'm thinking the reason I'm not getting it is this and this devotee, therefore I become angry at that devotee. If only this devotee would behave this way or that way or the other way, then I would get what I want for my service. So we become angry. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says also, if one doesn't feel joy upon seeing a Vaishnava. There are sometimes, you know, Vaishnavas, we've had some difficult dealings with them or whatever, and we see them, we go, oh, so-and-so. Tell them I'm not home, okay? So, of course, one has to be practical. But there should always be joy. Here's a Vaishnava. Oh, here's someone who's worshiping the Lord. Now, this doesn't just apply, my dear friends, to people who are card-carrying core members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says one should not hate the way the Muslims or the Christians or anyone who's worshiping God. We should feel joy. This person's worshiping God. Maybe they're a neophyte, maybe their system is whatever. But how wonderful that someone is worshiping God. How wonderful. Now, those of us who had children, when the child's learning to walk, if they just stand up, we become so happy. Okay? They stand up for 3 seconds. You call your parents and your sisters and brothers. They stood up. They take one step and then they fall again. Right? And you call everybody. You take all the pictures, you put them on Facebook. Send everybody. So Krishna also feels like that. If some conditioned soul just stands up for 1 second and then falls again on their backside, he gets very excited. Ha! One step. Yamaraj tells the Yamadutas, he said, if someone one time offers obeisances, one time, bows their head in a temple, you don't touch that person. And Lord Ramachandra, Lord Nisingadev said like that. Person one time says, my dear Lord, from this day on I am yours. That person's under the Lord's personal protection. And you might say, oh, but people are so neophyte doing this and that in the name of religion. All right, they may be neophyte. They may be, as Kapila Dev says, they may be performing devotional service in the mode of ignorance, but at least they've taken one step. So we feel joy. This person's taken one step. We may not associate with them directly, right? If they're not a very high character, we may not have, like Rupa Goswami's explaining the 6 loving exchanges. And then he explains the different levels of devotees, so you know with whom to exchange this love. So you don't become intimate with somebody whose character is not very good, but you still feel joy and respect. And Prabhupada has a very interesting statement in the Nectar Devotion. He says, if one has performed Krishna consciousness, but then offended a devotee, instead of going back to Godhead, such a person will take birth in a low family and then have the opportunity to complete their Krishna consciousness in the next life. So many years ago, I was at New Vrindavan during the Festival of Inspiration, and we were speaking on a Bhagavatam verse about reincarnation. And I asked the group, there were maybe 300 or 400 devotees, I said, how many of you have strong evidence in your life that this is not your first life practicing Krishna consciousness? And 90% of the devotees raised their hand. So at least one reason that one can take birth again, according to Prabhupada and Nectar Devotion, is if one has offended a devotee. We should take this very seriously. So how much care we should take? I mean, Krishna is taking so much care. God himself is taking so much care that he's coming as an avatar. He's displaying his Vrindavan pastimes. He's giving shelter to how much care we should take. Of course, sometimes we're critical out of a desire to have discrimination. Well, I don't want to be a fool, so I want to look at people honestly. So that can be done. That should be done. We're supposed to have discrimination, but without criticism. It's very interesting that Srila Rupa Goswami, in describing the different levels of devotees in the Upadesha Amrita, and I know that they're described differently in different places, but in the Upadesha Amrita, when Rupa Goswami describes the Uttama Bhakta, he gives only two symptoms. What are the two symptoms?
He's saying that everybody is serving Krishna and he's...
Oh, that's in Bhakti Rasamrita Center. So you're right, but wrong place. The Upadeshamrita. Yes? Undeviated devotional service and... That's nectar devotion. Yeah? That's nectar devotion. Undeviating devotional service and yes. And how does Prabhupada translate that? His heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. His heart is completely devoid of the propensity to criticize others. So he's not just saying that no criticism comes out of the mouth, he's saying that there's no inclination in the heart. Now, of course, we see again that the great sadhus, they do criticize. Madhvacharya was so much criticizing Sankaracharya and the impersonalistic philosophy. Srila Prabhupada was so much criticizing the evolutionists and the Mayavadis. But in the heart there's no what? There's no envy. There's no envy. That kind of criticism is made out of love. Out of love. It's the teacher's business. The teacher cannot say to the student, "Oh, everything in your paper is so nice." You have to take a red pen, otherwise how are you a teacher? Right? Necessary. But there's no envy, there's love. So to be a sadhu, one has to root this envy out of the heart. This propensity to think, I'm better than everybody, I'm the big cheese. Just look at how that person is dancing, and that person is dancing, and that person is dancing. I'll show them really how to dance. One must root out this envy. Otherwise, one is not a sadhu. And if one roots out this envy, then Krishna will come also for us. That is how to attract the Lord. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was cleaning the Gundicha temple. Didn't want one even speck. That's very hard in India. So much dust. Can you ever get all the dust out of your room? Possible. So they're throwing buckets of water on the walls and cleaning again and again. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took out even the fine dust. So if we want Krishna to sit in our heart, one lecture in Geneva, Prabhupada says, chanting Hare Krishna means you make a diamond throne in your heart and you ask Krishna to sit there and you bathe him with Ganga water and Jamuna water and you decorate him with nice clothes and ornaments. So if you want Krishna to sit, it has to be very clean. Everybody understands this. Even you go to get on a rickshaw, they take a cloth and they hit the seat. I don't know if it does any good, but at least a symbolic gesture, you know, that you don't want to sit in a dirty place. So the dirt Krishna is concerned with is this propensity to criticize others. That is the root symptom of being a miscreant. And at least don't criticize the devotee. Of course, Jivara Swarupaya Krishnara Nitya Dasa, Chaitanya Prabhu says everyone is a devotee. So better don't criticize anyone. Then you're safe. Because you don't know. Like Suruchi, she criticized Dhruva. At that time, he wasn't yet a devotee. Even when he went to the forest, he's considered by Rupa Goswami to be just a neophyte devotee. But because she criticized him, finished. Yes, and Prabhupada says in that purport, if you serve a devotee without knowledge, you get a good result. And if you offend a devotee without knowledge, you do not know where you are going. So certainly we have to be discriminating. What devotees should I serve and hear from? What devotees should I become intimate friends with? What devotees should I just offer my respects to. Certainly we have to be discriminating, but without envy. Without envy. Without a propensity to criticize. And always be serving the devotees. Always be serving the devotees. Devotees means everyone. Someone recently contacted me on the computer and on Skype, some business person in Mumbai. And I said, oh, are you interested in Krishna consciousness? He said, yes, I've been going to your temple. I wanted to learn something. So at one point in the conversation, I said, how may I serve you? He said, what does that mean? I was thinking how we devotees are always talking like that, right? How can I serve you? For somebody out in the world, what does that mean? So we should be trying to serve everyone. And somehow or other, how can I do good for others? At least to be joyful. Here's one of Krishna's children. Here's one of Krishna's parts and parcels. And if we behave like that, then Krishna will want to see us. Then he will have an avatar to come and see us. We'll say, wait a minute. It says here that he only comes on schedule. And he's not scheduled to come. So even if I serve all the devotees and I give up all my critical attitude, and they still he's not going to come. The next schedule is called Kalki Avatar. I don't want to hang around that long. No, Krishna will come. How will he come? He'll come in the holy name. The holy name is not just alphabets. It'll actually manifest. Bhaktivinoda Thakura says, when the Lord appears in the holy name, the holy name, he appears in the heart. And the holy name moves from the heart to the tongue. And then, as Rupa Goswami says, all the senses become inert. What in mystic yoga is called pratyahara. And one enters into actual samadhi. He manifests as the deity, manifests as prasadam. So if we really serve the sadhus, if we do what's very dear to the Lord's heart, if we never offend any of the sadhus and we serve the sadhus, then there'll be an avatar come for us to display his Vrindavan pastimes in our heart. And actually Krishna is anxious to come for us. He's waiting. When will they clean their heart up so I can sit down? Like you stand there waiting for the rickshaw wallet to clean the seat. You're waiting. So Krishna's waiting. When are they going to clean their heart? When are they going to remove from their heart this propensity to criticize us? So thank you very much. Anyone have any questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements? Yes? Oh, you're supposed to take the microphone. For the people on the radio. Still not on. There you go.
Okay, probably we could discuss this for hours, but I'm having some confusion about not criticizing. Because the definition of devotee that you gave is pretty broad. And, I mean, here in Vrindavan, we hear that the Vrindavasis are very dear to Krishna, the most dear. You know, basically, they may look like ordinary people to us, but anyone who's here in Vrindavan, especially born in Vrindavan, raised in Vrindavan, is, you know, part of Krishna's Nitya Lila. So if one of them does a violent crime, another devotee, how are we supposed to feel about that person?
We should feel that we want that person to be rectified in as fast and as painless a way as possible. Just like Prahlad Maharaj, his father tried to kill him. And it was a very, you know, you can just read that. Oh, well, he threw him off the cliff and threw him under elephants and threw him in boiling oil and gave him poison. Oh, okay. But if you really think about that, what does that mean? You know, what does that mean? Somebody tries to give you poison. What does that mean? They throw you off a cliff. They throw you in a pit of snakes. Pretty evil guy. So generally, if somebody even insults us, we want them to suffer. If someone just says, you know, you're really a fool. I mean, look at the... You're really full. We're thinking, We immediately become defensive and angry. So Prahlad Maharaj, very interesting, he said, "My dear Lord, my father has offended you and he's offended me." He didn't say my father did nothing wrong. He didn't say that. He said my father was evil. "You please liberate him." What does liberating mean? It means you remove that evil propensity. So Prahlad wanted his father to be rectified, but he wanted him to be rectified with as little suffering as possible. So generally, people who we see causing suffering, I mean, like I've seen in Vrindavan, people beating cows with thorns and things, throwing rocks at dogs for no reason. So generally, if somebody causes pain to another living entity, what to speak if they cause pain to you or pain to somebody dear to you, you generally think, I want them to have as much pain as they cause to me, isn't it? Or more, even. But why do we want the other living entity to suffer? So they'll learn. What's our general reason for wanting them to learn? Yes, generally the reason we want that person to learn is for our own protection. So if somebody's hurt me or hurt someone I love, I generally want that person to learn that lesson so that I'll be safe. Isn't it? And I'm thinking that the only way that person's going to learn is they have to feel as much pain or more as they cause me, and then they'll know what it feels like, and then they won't want to hurt me. Of course, Dharma the Bull says that if you think like that, then you are, you're the same thing, because you're filled then with hate. So that person doing something wrong is motivated by hate and envy. And if you want them to suffer, you're also motivated by hate and envy. They were going to get pleasure from your suffering or from the suffering of somebody. They were trying to take pleasure in causing suffering to somebody, isn't it? Wanting to get pleasure from causing suffering to someone is a very extreme example of envy and hatred. So if I want to get pleasure from causing them suffering, then Dharma the Bull says I'm the same. I'm no different. You can say, what about justice? We'll get there in a minute. Hold that. So let's say I want the person to be rectified. Why do I want the person? Why should I want the person to be rectified? What should be my reason? To help that person. Okay, how do I stay safe then? How do I stay safe? Not speaking? What did you say? Taking shelter of Krishna. Does taking shelter of Krishna mean that nothing bad will happen on the material level? No. Well, let's put aside the other person right now. So let's say I want the other person to be rectified for that person's sake. Because if that person doesn't get rectified, it's going to hurt them. It's going to damage them. It's going to pull them away from Krishna. They may have to go to hell for 10 million years. Especially they're in Vrindavan and they're doing something offensive in Vrindavan, how much they may have to suffer. So if I'm thinking about them, I don't want that person to suffer. I don't want to suffer. I mean, isn't that why we want the other person to feel pain so they won't, don't want anyone else to suffer? So if I'm feeling pain, I should not want anybody else to suffer. So I don't want them to suffer. Then how do I stay safe? How do I stay safe? Because a lot of my reason for wanting someone else to suffer and criticizing someone is a way to keep myself safe. How do I stay safe? I trust, this is deep. I trust that Krishna will meet all of my needs and that everything that Krishna does for me is perfect. Although it doesn't always look like that. Sometimes the things that Krishna does for me look the opposite. It looks like Krishna is devastating me. But if you look at very young children, 2-3-year-old children, I don't know if any of you are parents, but 2-3-year-old children, sometimes they say, "I hate you, mommy." You heard? Sometimes. "I hate you. I'm going to run away." When my oldest son was 4, he said that one time. I forget what it was about. He said, I don't like you anymore. I'm going to go and find a new mommy. I said, okay, we'll put a sign on you. Very naughty boy. Anyone who wants him can take him home. But the point is the children feel like that. When you say to the child, don't hit your brother on the head with your toy truck, they become angry. Or when you say, no, you can't have your cookies now. Or what to speak of, you have to take this bitter medicine. You have to go to the doctor and get this painful test. The children become very angry. So we also become very angry at Krishna. We think, you know. So trusting that whatever Krishna does for us is for our good. Again, that's not easy when something terrible happens. When your child dies, when your leg gets cut off, when you get in a horrible car accident. You know, then it's very hard to think. Everything Krishna is doing is for my good. That's very difficult. Therefore, Lord Brahma says, Tatenu Kampan. Someone who thinks like that, Dayabak, he inherits the kingdom of God. Sounds very simple. Oh, whatever Krishna does, okay, this is my karma. You gave me a little bit of my karma. You're so kind, you're so merciful. Offer more obeisance to the Lord. Dayabak, I inherit the kingdom of God. That's easy. Yeah, it's easy until your leg gets cut off. It's easy until your 2-year-old dies of cancer. It's easy until your house burns down. It's easy until some other devotee in the Hare Krishna movement kicks you out of your service and insults you. Then it's not so easy anymore to say, yes, Krishna, everything you do is good. You know, I can read it, 15:15 purport. God is all good, God is all merciful. You know, but to really do that. So that's how I'm safe. Mare Krishna, Rake K, Rake Krishna, Mare K. I'm safe by whatever you want to do, Krishna. You want to kill me, you kill me. You want to save me, you save me. Of course, you take ordinary precautions. In India, that's a little hard. They don't exist in India. They just, you know, you get in the car and you say, where do I buckle my seatbelt? No, no, no need. But you take ordinary precautions. But your safety is that I depend on you, Krishna, whatever Krishna you want. Okay, so now I'm safe. That's a very hard step. If you can't take that step, the rest is not possible. If you can't say, Krishna, I trust that you will meet all my needs, and how you will meet my needs is perfect, even though I don't understand it. And when there's difficulty, I offer more obeisances. If you can't take that step, doing the rest, you can't do it. Not completely. But at least you do that to some extent. Then you can say, I want this other person to be rectified for their benefit. I don't need it for my benefit. For my benefit, Krishna's taking care of it. And if Krishna doesn't take care of me, well, that's his business. Krishna's feeding me. If Krishna wants me to fast, then I fast. If Krishna wants somebody to beat me up, then I'm going to get beat up. Krishna, I can't control that anyway. Part of that is looking and saying, no matter what precautions I take, I can't control that anyway. Okay, now I've got that. Now I want to take care of the other person for their benefit. I want them to be rectified. I want them to be learned. Okay, now this is a little secret, my dear friends. Who here has ever learned a lesson through pain? Good lesson, but through suffering. Who's learned a lesson through suffering? Good lesson. Who's learned a lesson through joy, through ecstasy, through some wonderful experience? Who's learned a good lesson through wonderful experience? If you can choose, how would you like to learn your lessons? Okay. So Suniti told Dhruva, if you desire harm for someone else, that harm will come to you. If we don't want to learn lessons through suffering, my humble suggestion is desire those who hurt you or hurt others or do bad things to learn their lessons through joy. As you, according to Bhagavatam, whatever you desire for others is what you will experience. So if someone does something horrible, they burn down my house, they murder my mother and father, they murder my children, they take all of my money, I say, I want this person to be rectified for their sake. Because as long as they have this envy and anger, they're going to suffer terribly. And just like I want to be rectified through joy, I want this person to be rectified through joy. I'd love it if this person had a transformation of heart without having to go through hell, without having to go to jail, without having to suffer from the Yamadutas, because I don't want to go to the Yamadutas. I don't like suffering. Anybody like suffering? I don't like it. I don't want this person to suffer, but I want them to be rectified. I'd like them to be rectified in as joyfully a way as possible. I'd like them to deeply understand what they did wrong and get deep empathy and deep understanding in as joyful and as fast a way as possible. Now, I understand that that's not always possible. Therefore, there's a justice system in the world, and there are people who refuse to learn through joy. Do we ever refuse to learn through joy? And such people need to learn through suffering. That's understood. But our desire is not that anybody suffers. I don't know exactly where it is, but I think it's in the first canto, where it says that Krishna with great regret gives out punishment to the conditioned souls. A normal parent does not like to punish the child. It's with regret. You say to the child, that's not a nice way to behave. You need to behave this way. What you want the child to do is say, oh, that's right, mommy. Thank you so much. Sometimes they do. You don't want to say, oh, you're grounded, you're in the corner, or whatever. It's with regret. With regret. So Krishna also feels that way. We should also feel that way for everyone. Just like we would like, you know, every one of us would like that in the next 5 minutes, Krishna appears in our heart, burns away all the anarthas, and there it is, just through some ecstatic, wouldn't that be wonderful? Desire that for your enemies. Desire that for your enemies. If you desire transformation through joy for those who hurt you, then you will learn very few lessons through suffering. Because whatever you give, according to Suniti, Bhagavatam, whatever you desire for others is what you will experience. So if we're tired of learning lessons through suffering, that is one way. Another way is to respond when Krishna tries to teach us joyfully. That's another part of the equation. But part of it is what we desire for others. So that way there's no envy. And if I see that a person needs punishment because they won't learn through joy, it's given without envy. I say, okay, this person's not going to be rectified, then they'll have to receive some other punishment. It doesn't mean you never report anybody to the police, but without envy, without hatred. And if one does that, then dialogue. Then you're worthy for Krishna's association, because that's Krishna. That's Krishna. People are trying to kill him, people are trying to kill his devotees, and he has no envy. And he has no hatred. He may punish them if necessary. If they won't be rectified any other way, he's willing to punish them, but he has no envy. Alright, so that was a long answer. That was a 12-minute condensation of a 2-hour seminar that I gave. So we probably should end now, unless somebody has something that you're just really want to hear. Is that alright? It's not easy, as one devotee said about something completely unrelated. He said, it was very expensive but worth every penny. So, Bhakti Chaitanya Maharaj was speaking about this in Mayapur. Get a good deal. You know, you buy something and you say, oh, I really got it for a good price. So Krishna consciousness is such a thing that even if you give everything, it's a really good price. From the material point of view, it's a very high price. But what you get is so wonderful, you say, I really got that cheap. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.